This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
To talk all about your Cleveland Guardians, we have one of our favorite guests here to talk some Guardians baseball. Of Guardians TV, Guardians host Al Pawlowski joining us now on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Al, welcome to the show.
Hey, Nick, Jonathan, great to be here.
So we talked earlier that we have a couple guys at the station, Al, that went through the 3-hour wait last night and watched the big hit by Manzardo. We heard Stephen Vogt talk about we're here, it's just part of the thing, nobody really cared. How do you folks in the TV side of things handle the rain delays and just trying to keep yourself ready for if baseball time happens?
Well, we go visit with a lot of people in the press box that we've always seen but never talked to, and figured now is a good time to get to know some of these people that are up here. So that's kind of what we were doing yesterday. So I met some new friends. But otherwise, yeah, you're pretty much just sitting there. You know, you're looking at the radar. You're going, okay, we should be able to get this started here at some point tonight. But that's pretty much what we do. But it was good to meet some new friends.
That's good. After, obviously, the rain delay and everything else, that and really just a bad couple days for the Guardians, they got in the win column. Manzardo with the big home run. He's turning into Kyle Schwarber. It's an interesting development. Just a lot of home runs, not much with batting average or anything else, but that really doesn't matter because this team needed the long ball, Al.
Yeah, that's a really interesting comp. I never thought about that, but I like it. From a power perspective and a key hit perspective, that's a good guy to emulate. Now, if he can, he doesn't have a bad eye now, Kyle, but he doesn't have Kyle Schwarber's. I mean, Schwarber and Kwan are about in the same level as far as, understanding the strike zone. But I like it a lot, and I like it because the one thing that, as you alluded to, Kyle Manzardo has shown us here in the early part of this season, number one, the power is definitely developing. Number two, the thing that we love about him is that he's hitting it in key times. Last night in the ninth inning in a tie game, he hit a home run. Obviously, that's going to be a game winner for you. So I like the Schwarber comp. The other guy that I was thinking of as far as a key hit type of guy that did it when he was young in his career and throughout his career for Cleveland is Jason Kipnis. That's another guy that, whenever the chips were down and he was at the plate, he always came through for you.
Al, Angel Martinez has been batting at the bottom of the lineup here for the last little bit here. And listen, I understand there's always a lot of strategy here, but I'm looking at kid hitting .333. Is this about they're still just trying to find ways and hide him in the lineup to get him at bats, or is there maybe a strategic reason on why he's the ninth hitter, trying to boost some stock there at the bottom of the lineup?
So that's a great question. If you'll talk to veteran managers about this, generally what they'll say now is, when a new kid comes up and they're planning on playing him quite a bit, whether it's somebody like a Kyle Manzardo, because we saw him hit toward the bottom of the order when he first came up last year, or somebody like Angel Martinez, who also has some speed. So one theory could be, all right, we're going to bat him ninth because he's your secondary leadoff hitter. He's just going to get one less at bat than everybody else by hitting in that bottom hole. But the other thing is, too, is to take the pressure off a young hitter. generally when you're hitting more toward the bottom of the order, there's going to be less pressure on you. Where if you're up toward the top of the order, you're expected to deliver, either get the big hit, like Manzardo did last night, or get on base in front of those guys, like Stephen Kwan has such an aptitude to do. That being said, if Angel Martinez continues to hit like he is, get on base like he does, he's got great speed as we've seen it, I don't think it'll be too long before you see him hitting in that two-hole. I think that he's destined for that, that he seems to me to be like, right now when I look at this group, the perfect two-hole hitter. There's other guys that can do it too, but I think that's his ultimate destiny as far as I can see it at this moment in time.
Al, Nolan Jones not off to a great start. He didn't play in yesterday's game, but I'm so encouraged, and I feel like I'm crazy saying it, but he just hits the ball so incredibly hard, and his hard hit rate is at, you know, 95 percentile in all of baseball. It just feels like there's better games to come when you're hitting the ball that hard and just consistently not getting rewarded.
Yeah, agreed. When that's a big thing now, this, you know, exit velo. Is it everything? No, it's not. Luis Arraez will tell you it's not everything. He hits the second to least hardest ball in baseball among qualified hitters, and Luis Arraez is probably your most dangerous hitter for average when he's healthy right now. Stephen Kwan's another guy that will be up there too, but Stephen does hit it a lot harder. That being said, most guys that hit the ball hard give themselves a better chance of getting a hit. It's harder to field. It gets to the gaps quicker. It gets to the holes quicker. You're going to just pick up more base hits. It's obviously going to go further as well when you hit it with that high velo. Last two or three weeks, I think we've seen Nolan Jones put together some pretty good at-bats. We've seen him hit the ball pretty hard. We just had something on our show last night about that, about his top five velos. He's got five velos already, exit velos that are 107 or even better. That's pretty impressive. So I agree. I think it's going to come around. You know, there's always the anomaly guy that literally tears the cover off the ball, but for whatever reason, he just can't hit for average. But I think that Nolan's going to do it. He showed you 2 years ago when he was in Colorado that he can do it. It is there. It's not like he's over the hill by any stretch. He's still a young guy. I think that he's going to come through eventually.
Al, we got clearly the best start of the season from Tanner Bibee last night. Only gave up five base runners. Did give up one earned, but in seven innings. I mean, that's as good as we've gotten from him. Just 92 pitches as well. And yet, he was on a Jeff Passan article on one of the five players in baseball whose slow starts worry him. So is last night a red herring, or do we think or is Tanner Bibee trending in the right direction?
Yeah, definitely trending in the right direction. I've been around a lot of guys over the years. Tanner Bibee is one that I would worry about the least. He puts in the effort. He's highly competitive. He's healthy. He's the type of guy that you want on your team. You want him to be your number one. You want him to be your ace. He's got the physical characteristics. He's got the right character. He's got the drive. I know he just signed a long-term contract. He's not a guy that just wanted to sign a long-term contract and Anthony Rendon it and decide that, you know what, I really don't care about baseball. That's not Tanner Bibee. So I think what you saw last night, you're going to see more of. He made a slight adjustment, and clearly it paid off. I mean, this guy, he's always thinking, he's always working. His dad's a high school coach. He works with him all the time. He's a guy that, he's got everything that you want in an ace pitcher.
Class A got into the game in the ninth. It was a tie game, so not a save situation. Ended up getting the win. How do you see that moving forward with Class A? Is he's kind of been removed from that role, but then the skipper, Stephen Vogt, hasn't really taken that away from him quite yet publicly.
Right, yeah, and he even said last night that Class A is the closer, and I think that, you know, with the amount of money he's getting and the track record that he has shown, I mean, there were some people say, I agree with this, he was the best pitcher in the world the last couple of years. When you think about it, not a starter, but a guy that came in and just so difficult to hit. Hitters have made an adjustment to him. So it's not hard to see. You can notice it too. They're jumping him. They're looking at the first fastball that's over the plate. They're swinging. They're not letting Class A get ahead of them. So now Class A's got to make an adjustment back. It appears he has from these last couple of outings. What I think also is going to happen, and this is just my opinion, this is not something I heard from anybody, but it's tough when you've got to go 3 days in a row, occasionally four. It's tough, and that takes a lot out of you. Cade Smith is showing you that he can close games too. So now maybe if Class A closes back-to-back games, that third time it's like, okay, Cade Smith's available. Let's use him to close. Let's get Class A a day off. I think that can benefit him. I think it benefits a lot of relief pitchers. Good news is Class A wants the ball, as do most of the good ones. They, you know, most of the time, if you want him to go 5 days in a row, he wants that ball. But health-wise and effectiveness-wise, sometimes it's better to get a to get an extra off day in there, and I think that might be what you see. But he is definitely the closer.
Al Pawlowski in the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. So we've seen fits and starts from the offense. We've seen fits and starts from the rotation. We've seen fits and starts from the bullpen. Which one of those three is closest to putting it together and maybe finding some significant consistency?
I think it's the bullpen. That's where you got the most depth. That's who's been the most dominating of any aspect of the three that you've mentioned for Cleveland this year. Occasionally you get a bad outing out of the collective bullpen, but generally they're pretty good. I'm not really worried about them at all. I think the starters, you know, I think what you saw from Gavin Williams was an anomaly the other night. I think what you saw from Tanner Bibee last night was more of what you're going to see from him. Ben Lively is really found a home here in Cleveland. And he's figured it out. He's a nice piece. I think you've got some really exciting young guys, too. So I think the rotation is going to be okay. Now, as far as the lineup goes, that is the one area. You know, if we're going to be objective about this, there has been inconsistency. As much as we love the power with Kyle Manzardo, you like to see him hit for a little bit better average. I know that power means more than average right now in Major League Baseball. But you'd like to see a little more of that from him. And then the lower part of the order, there's been a lot of inconsistency. And that's something that you got to get more consistency from the offense, especially from, you know, the guys that are hitting 6 through 9.
Guardians continue their series today against the Twins. And so I got to ask you, you know, Minnesota didn't make many moves this offseason, and they continue to run out, you know, the trio of players that they just rely on. And a lot of them, they can't, remain healthy, Buxton, Correa, those guys. But it's been a lackluster start to the season for them. What do you make of what the Twins' strategy is right now, as they seem like they just continue to just tread water?
What I see from Minnesota, and that's a great question too, their offense is very good. The last few games, Tanner really cooled them off last night. That was one of the concerning things too. It's like we're catching Minnesota when they're hot. Yeah, pitching wise, I think that's where Minnesota is going to have some struggles there. You know, I like Joe Ryan a lot. We miss him on this series. Not upset about that in a 4-game set. Ober is always good against Cleveland. That's another guy that really has the change of figured out in the off-speed stuff. But after that, I mean, you know, Paddock's not very good. We'll see what they have in Woods Richardson. He's showing flashes and not. But as far as Minnesota goes, I mean, that offense has got a lot of nice young bats. I'm really interested to see how they're going to develop.
Al, great stuff as always, buddy. It's just great to catch up with you. Loving what the Guardians are doing here, staying above water, continuing to figure it out, and can't wait to see what we do the rest of this series and beyond.
Yeah, sounds great, guys. Great talking with you, and looking forward to the next time.
Al Pawlowski there on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. So we'll react to what Al had to say, and we do have a little update on the Cavaliers to pass along as well in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan. I think we've just settled into, and maybe this is the way it's always been, and social media just crystallizes this, no one's 100% good or 100% bad. All of us, like 98% of us, are somewhere in between the two extremes. So, like, for instance, so this is not bad or good person, but I just mean in terms of the job I thought they did. Like, you can say, I thought Andrew Berry had a good job, did a good job in the draft this last weekend, even if you don't think he's done a good enough job the 5 previous years. Like,
sure.
It is entirely possible to compliment somebody that you don't believe in otherwise.
Well, but I think this goes more to the idea that it always appeared Shador was kind of like born for this type of franchise quarterback role, with the idea that he gets all the other things. Now, he needs to play well, obviously. He needs to be a good quarterback to go with it. But all the other parts of being a franchise quarterback, the being in the community, the being a leader, the working out, and like first guy in, last guy out mentality, like, he's always checked those boxes off. That's why he impressed so many people at Colorado.
All right, we're going to get to the Guardians here in just a second, because we want to react to what Al Pal had to say here in a moment. But just one final note here. If after today I'm officially decreeing, because I'm now going to be the gatekeeper on this stupid topic, if you're a sports talk show host that talks 100 humans versus a gorilla from this point forward, you're officially hack.
I need 100 Cleveland men.
I thought the topic was a bit hacky in the first place, considering, like, it's not a bad July topic.
Yeah.
It's not a bad June topic. But when you're like 2 days removed from the NFL draft, I thought it was a little bit hacked, but there was a lot of funny stuff. I thought Ken and Anthony, it's a lot of funny stuff with their back and forth on it. So I'm not just trying to say that the topic in general bad, but now, like, I'm seeing NFL Network, the replacement crew with Ross Tucker, whom
I was going to say, that's your guy right there.
Hey, guys, we've all made the rounds. Everyone's done a bit on it. Ha, 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 ha. We all have takes on it. We're done.
Well, it's all about when you retire it, right?
It needs to be retired.
I think most people will. I think the idea that you are exhausted by it, enough people are as well.
Because here's the thing. Ken and Anthony tend to be in the anomaly on this. Like, they did a funny bit on it. A lot of the stuff I've seen on it is just not funny. Or it's the same thing that everybody's saying. Right?
I think he had it right the first time. It's a July bit.
Now, that being said, now that I've declared that, if you're trying to start having that topic today, going forward, it is hack. I'd like to point out that I'm so glad that Tanner Bibee had a nice start last night, because it totally took all the wind out of Jeff Passan's sail of the article that he...
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
He had that Tanner's rough start is one of the five, that he's one of the five players in baseball whose slow starts in baseball worry him.
So I think if we were to ask Jeff Passan today, though, Solon's own Jeff Passan, he would stand by the article and he'd stand by what he wrote, because a lot of it was not off the suggestion of outcome more than anything. It was more about what his pitches aren't doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he goes his fastball, a slower slider, a changeup in five starts. Now he's got six, but in five starts, Bibee had only generated 39 swings and misses, which is obviously not a lot. And so I don't think it was without merit that he put this out there, but it was really nice that Tanner Bibee had a good night, because it does kind of shut him up just a little bit.
I mean, I think if we're looking at his numbers, if those numbers carried from the first five games into last night, I think the Jeff Passan thing could have been a little bit like wildfire and gotten us a little in panic.
I mean, strikeouts are down, walks are up, his home runs allowed are as high as they've ever been.
Because what you're saying is there is valid reasons to have the conversation.
Yes. Kind of like how when I defend Nolan Jones, I can do so with the idea that although he has not been hitting the ball great, his exit velocity, as we talked about with Al Pal, is one of the league's best. And like, there's reasons why he's going to look better than maybe what his average on base percentage slugging suggests.
I mean, when we start talking about slow starts for the Guardians, guys, I had a John Kensey home run over the weekend, and then he got another hit last night. I got another hit in the last game that I saw him in the lineup. And I'm like, we got two hits in like four games. We're back. Where he is just this side. And by the way, his numbers are the ones that should terrify you.
Yeah, they're not good.
If you look, I mean, does he have a walk yet this year? I don't think he has a walk yet this year. And he's been a predominant player for them since opening day.
I like that we can't get Mac to do any research ever. But if you're like, hey, does John Kensey know well? Does he have a walk? And Mac immediately is to the computer.
I mean, just like, this is his
Super
Bowl.
When you get that answer for us, Mac, you let us know. That deep dive, that analytical research that you have there.
He has two.
Oh, what? I told you. He's coming around.
Real where were you when moments. How could you forget those two walks, Nick?
So it's so weird. Like, there aren't a lot of slow starts. I do think the Tanner Bibee stuff, it's one of those things of when you bring up the peripheral numbers or the movement data or the velo, like, those things start to concern you. But overall, like, at 16 and 13, I'm definitely in the zone where, no, I'm just chilling with the Guardians on a nightly basis, and I'm not like... It's not like when Austin Hedges used to come to the plate, like April 3rd, when he was this everyday catcher, and I'd be like, this mother, I can't believe, like, I don't think there's anybody outside of maybe John Kensie that right now I feel that way about in the lineup or in the rotation or in the bullpen.
Which is kind of sad. I kind of wish we had more of an urgency attached to the team. You know, I kind of wish we, because it sounds like, I'm with you. Gavin hasn't been as great as what we've historically seen. Bybee hasn't been as great as what we've historically seen, but neither one has been horrible.
Yeah, and neither it's of just, none of their stuff is making you wonder that they're hurt.
No.
It's just young guys learning to pitch at the big league level, which, oh, by the way, it's early in the season. That's where you do it.
I guess the slower slider would be maybe a tip of something with Bybee, but we don't need to go too far into that. It's just they're just playing less than what they typically do, and it's okay. It's a long season. They'll be fine. I am a little worried about this being the end of Carlos Santana, though.
No, is it bad that I'm just playing on the same?
I think he's just eating a bunch of at bats is all it is. But it's just not. He's a good defensive first baseman at this point. He's really not doing anything offensively.
I hate to be that guy, but it's Santana in March, April, and May. Like this is Carlos. Hey, by the way, he's gotten a couple hits recently too. So maybe I'm just being a Carlos stan, but like. Okay,
it hasn't been pretty.
It hasn't been. No. But that's Carlos in April and May. No.
Yeah, that's fine.
Is it bad that I can just fall back on that and that's like a panacea?
When June comes, when June, July comes, and I want you to keep that same energy. But because I've been worried. I've been worried the entire time that we were at the end of Carlos Santana and that he was going to just turn into a good defensive first baseman that can't really hit much, and he hasn't really disproven that.
I mean, if he's a 250 hitter and he hits 22 home runs this year, it's a massive success.
I know, but he's not. That's the problem.
So if he had five homers like Hosey did, is three more homers, would that make you feel better?
It's not just about hitting a quota of home runs or anything like that. He's hitting .216, .299, he's slugging .294.
I mean, he's got a .593 OPS. That's almost 600.
Yeah, okay. It hasn't been pretty. When you're slugging under 300, there's not much I can say for you.
You know, I actually can tell you the player that whose slow start actually does concern me, and it's Rocchio.
Okay.
And mostly because
of his platinum blonde hair?
That platinum Rocchio is just, it's not working.
The killer just, shades that he had on as well?
Maybe go red from here.
You know what? I thought about it a little bit. With having the platinum blonde hair and then going to the shades, I think he was almost doing like the scene in Tin Cup where McAvoy puts like the T behind his ear and just tries to get as crazy as he possibly can and look as silly as he can to maybe get him out of a little bit of a funk.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what Rocchio was going for.
Well, but here's the thing. He went to the platinum thing and the glasses way too early. Like you were.
But he was in a funk.
Yeah, well, but you were playoff Rocchio. And I guess maybe that's like now that we've seen him come back and he's an inconsistent player defensively, he's an inconsistent base runner, he's a wildly inconsistent hitter. Playoff Rocchio so far in the rearview mirror, it's like, all right, I get we're giving this kid a chance here, but Arias is hitting. Juan Brito, when he was healthy,
Arias is having a
was
great
raking.
Season.
Like, Angel Martinez, if he's not in center field when Lane Thomas comes back, is certainly doing some good stuff.
I even like what Schneeman's doing this year.
I mean, and now granted, when Lane Thomas comes back, John Kensie will probably go to AAA. But Angel, like, it just makes more sense to me, put Lane in center field, Angel at second base, and then Arias at short, and either Rocchio goes to AAA or becomes a super utility guy.
Yeah, I just feel like we're treating the season like it's a lazy river ride. And that's okay. Maybe they've earned it. It's just we're just kind of coasting with this season.
I think you're right, but that's where, like, if you're three games above .500, that's where you should be, right? Like, and maybe I'm starting to fall back on the Tito principle that if you were around .500 when you got in June, I just expected the team to come alive. But that's kind of where I am. Of like, if you stick around 3 to 5 games above .500, no one's running away with this division. 3 to 5 games are around.
Tigers look really good to start, though.
They look good, but they're also a team. Look at that offense. I heard Baskin and Phelps' breakdown of like, man, if they fix Torkelson, it's like they still are like three hitters short.
They did a Torkelson breakdown?
They did a very, it was like a 3-minute Torkelson moment that I thought was maybe the highlight of that show that I heard it on. But like, no one's running away with this division. Like, you're right, by the way. We are absolutely, this is a lazy river and we're just, you know, good time Johnnies out here. I think it's kind of the way we should be with this team. I think they're right where they need to be. And oh, by the way, I say that because I think the lineup has another gear to get consistency-wise. I think the rotation has another gear to get consistency-wise. So does the bullpen.
I mean, the rotation, in my mind, can only go up moving forward.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think Logan's given you a lot better starts. Logan Allen, more than I thought.
We both expected a lot more out of Ortiz, and we didn't get it.
But again, like, they...
Bybee and Gavin are both much better pitchers than what they are.
But you've gotten glimpses. And I think early in the season,
well, that's
if
we're
you're
saying,
still
that's
winning...
That's why they're saying we're only going up here.
Absolutely. So, like, now at some point, you need one of these three parts of your team to be dominant. You either need the bullpen to be dominant, you need the rotation to click into gear, or you need the offense to do it. You do need some part. You can't just be, that's a pretty good bullpen, pretty good rotation, pretty good lineup. You do need something elite out of this those trios to, like, make it work. But, yeah, as long as they're above 500, I think I'm pretty cool with where they are right now.
Yeah, I thought the bullpen would be something that we could latch on to. And then you heard last night with Stephen Vogt, and just not even with Class A was just so, it's just so weird. They put him in the ninth in a tie game, and then afterwards he just is like, he's still our closer, he's still our guy. And it just, I don't know what they're doing there. I don't. But there's just so many good, there's so many good pieces to the bullpen. The bullpen still has to be the elite part. You're talking about the three, the bullpen still has to be the elite
Mike
part.
Mike Alixa of CBS Sports says that last night was Emmanuel Clase losing his starter's job or his closer's job. So we'll see. 216-474-0092. Which slow starts actually concern you for the Guardians? And this cannot be what the NBA signed up for, and yet it's become a real problem, and it reared its head last night in the NBA in the playoffs. That's in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan. The Milwaukee Bucks under Doc Rivers have conveniently lost their superpowers. So, well done. The Bucks got gentlemanly swept by Indy last night.
I think it's been like 3 years since they won an actual postseason game, Nick. Like, it's been a long time since Giannis has had some little success in the postseason.
The thing we don't talk nearly enough about in the NBA is how, because we continue to regurgitate the fact that we've had so many one-off champions in a row in the NBA. But look at how much each one of those teams to win the NBA championship have bungled the next step, right? Like Giannis and the post-championship team, the Dame Lillard stuff, keeping Brooke Lopez around, Middleton's injury.
That comes with having six title winners in 6 years,
well,
right?
No, exactly. But Golden State refusing to move off their core four when it was clear Clay was cooked and Draymond should have been sent to the sanitarium. Denver just running it back with Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic and Aaron Gordon and just expecting them to continue to be able to win.
Yeah.
And that understanding there might be another gear to get to and maybe put another player with Nikola Jokic.
Hey, Boston hasn't screwed it up yet.
I mean,
if the Cavs beat Boston, then people will say that they just ran back the same team from last year.
So I think Boston's very similar to Golden State. Like, the flaws with Boston are that weren't exposed last year because of the luckiest road to an NBA championship in NBA history. They're still there. They're still there for teams to go ahead and take advantage of. So I do think that it'll be very much similar to the Golden State thing of, you have the assets. You could go out there and you could have pivoted with the roster. And here's the problem with the Boston thing is, with Boston, they're coming up on some decisions with guys. Drew Holiday's like 34, well,
they
making $40
like,
million a year.
They have like $500 million already committed.
Yeah.
Like, you're talking about like money committed. They have it all spent on these guys.
Mac.
Not to mention they have new ownership too, so you could have cost cutting coming.
So, guys are getting older. So there's natural churn that has to happen. Again, that's a little bit premature. I wasn't trying to turn it into that. But I think it's interesting that we haven't necessarily talked about that as much and how teams have failed to stick the landing trying to chase that next championship.
Yeah, I mean, it's three straight years of now losing in the first round for the Bucks. You had to go all the way back until they lost in the semis after the finals. But this has been – so you go win finals in 2021. You go lose Eastern Conference semis in a three straight first round, one and done, you're out.
Which tend to coincide with naming Doc Rivers as your head coach.
Well, that's how you go Budenheiser into Griffin, into Prunty, into then Doc.
I mean, the Griffin one, really, I mean, it's funny, the roster, problematic. And even the addition of Dame Lillard, like, smart idea, but then you kept Middleton and Lopez around hoping they'd still remain relevant. The Lillard stuff isn't the problem, but man, the coaching stuff has been wild there. It's almost like the Haslams can't hire coaches. I digress.
Okay, if you're a Bucks fan, we're at the point you don't even get mad if Giannis says, I want to go play with the Knicks now.
Oh, yeah, they're still mad.
No, I mean, like, you'll be mad because they'll leave. Obviously, it'll be upsetting for them, but you'll also look at it and say, Giannis, I understand what you're doing.
In a way, though, Giannis did bail out the Bucks in general and Doc Rivers last night.
Well, because that's supposed to be the conversation today.
The conversation today
is supposed to be, where does Giannis go next year? Does he stay with Milwaukee? How should Milwaukee fans feel about the idea of him leaving? Everything associated with that.
It should also be about firing Doc Rivers and how do you, like, what's your pitch to Giannis? Like, how do you save the Giannis thing in Milwaukee? And instead, it's the post-game antics of Tyrese Halliburton's dad. Now, we can say this, because initially we didn't really know what was going on. We saw Giannis walk over at the end of the game. They went head-to-head, Tyrese Halliburton's dad and him. And so here's Giannis.
First he went with Mathurin, and yes. We thought that was the big deal.
And by the way, Mathurin, you don't want that smoke. Giannis is 7'1".
He grabbed his head like a basketball.
Yeah, like, don't do that, buddy. But then here's Giannis' comments on the run-in with Halliburton's dad. Then we're going to play Halliburton in a second.
You know, having somebody's dad, which I'm happy for him, and I'm happy for his son, and I'm happy that he's happy for his son. That's how you're supposed to feel. But coming to me and disrespecting me and cursing at me, I think it's totally unacceptable. Totally unacceptable, okay? But it's not respectful. I talk with him at the end, and I think we're in a good place.
All right, so he talks about then talking with Halliburton, and I give Tyrese Halliburton a lot of credit here for how he handled talking about the Giannis interaction with his dad.
As far as the incident between Giannis and my pops, I had no idea it happened until I got to the back and was showed the video. Me and my pops have talked about that, and I don't agree with what transpired there from him. I think that he just, you know, got excited, saw his son make a game winner, and came on the court. We had a conversation, and, you know, I think he just needs to just allow me to just play basketball, stay over there. I think it's the emotions of the game, just got excited there. I'll talk with Giannis eventually about it. Just, I don't think that my pops was in the right at all there, and, you know, everybody's grown men, and, you know, we'll just go from there.
So this is not an isolated trend. Like, whatever happened last night, it's very apparent Giannis and Tyrese have squashed this, which is great. I'd be pretty surprised if the NBA doesn't have some sort of reaction to this. But if you there is a growing trend, and it grows greater every year, of great players' dads being involved in stuff.
Yeah.
Obviously, the most obvious one is Ja Morant's dad.
Yeah, he's constantly just a headache on the sidelines.
And I don't know about you guys. The only thing I don't love about going to high school football games is the dads that stand along back of the stands screaming at their kids on what to do or screaming at the coach or whatever, because it's like, sit down and shut up. This isn't about you. It's about your kid. It's about his team. Let them be. They've somehow infiltrated the NBA in a way that absolutely is like, this is part of an image problem that's starting to become an even bigger issue just alongside the massive entourages that are having post-game kerfuffles as well.
Been a weird couple weeks for dads, right? With you had Nico, you have obviously Dion and everything that associated there, and then now this. What do you do in this scenario? I have no idea why he was allowed on the court to begin with. Wouldn't you think security would step in right there?
Hakeem Olajuwon can't get on the court when the Houston Cougars advance to the national
security?
Championship game, and Tyrese Halliburton's dad can get on the court to talk mush to Giannis.
Also, this goes back to my idea that fear factor stopped being fear factor once they realized the contestants that are that nothing bad was going to happen to him.
Yeah,
and so like if Giannis would have just punched Halliburton's dad in the face, like Charles Barkley suggested this morning on the Dan Patrick Show, if he would have just punched him in the face, nobody would mess with any player ever again.
And the problem is, it's going to happen.
They're getting a little too comfortable, these dads.
It's going to be Ja Morant's dad. It's going to be it's going to be somebody's dad. And listen, I don't want to say these guys shouldn't be there, but and honestly, it's on NBA teams. Like, you know which dads or which family members should be near the court.
Like if you're Memphis, shouldn't you just be like, hey, T. Morant, I know you like being at these games.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll give you a suite.
Exactly.
We'll put you up in a suite. We'll put you as far away from being that guy as you possibly can, but you're going to go every game. We'll have all the drinks you want, all the beverages, all the pizza you can eat. Like, they got to find some answer, because it was just weird.
216-474-0092. What can the NBA do about overzealous family members? It is about awareness of the players. It's going to take, because it takes one family member getting popped to turn this into the malice at the palace. And the NBA, to this point, has been asleep at the wheel on this. This is as serious as the entourage thing, which they've tried to engage with as well. We got Daryl Ryder coming up in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.